It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we continue to cover news around the state, it's been a busy few weeks in Illinois, and we turn our attention now to Sangamon County, which recently released a settlement with the family of Sonia Massey, who was killed by a Sangamon County deputy sheriff last summer. Joining us now to talk more about the settlement and how the community is responding to it is Mawa Iqbal, State House reporter for public radio stations across Illinois. Mawa, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So as we said, there's been a settlement that's been reached. What did the parties agree on? What are the terms of this?
Yeah, so it's a $10 million settlement, which will go to Sonia's two teenage children. We got a memo from the county board that the negotiations took place up in Chicago for the last week. They were very intensive. The lawyers from the county met with the lawyers of the family. And in a press conference that the family's lawyers had yesterday, they were saying that they're very satisfied with the dollar amount that they reached because of how great it is, right? And so for context, you know, they were talking about how in other cases where an unarmed Black person is shot by a law enforcement officer, like George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, you know, their families got settlements that were pretty close to what Sonia Massey's family got. So in Breonna Taylor's case, they got a settlement of $12 million. In George Floyd's case, they got a settlement of $26 million. And so for Sangamon County, which of course isn't as big as Louisville or Minneapolis, $10 million is quite a chunk of change. That they were saying that the budget for the sheriff's department this upcoming fiscal year is projected to be $22 million. So if you think about $10 million is almost half of the sheriff's department budget. But of course, you know, with any horrific tragedy like this, obviously there's no dollar amount that can put the family at ease, right? We did hear from James Wilburn, who's Sonia's father, who was saying that, you know, it's a tragic day. My heart is heavy, and no amount of money can bring her back. And it's what was especially tragic, I think, for the family yesterday was that it also happened to be her 37th birthday. So, of course, they were thinking about her a lot more yesterday.
Yeah, you mentioned James Wilburn, Sonia Massey's father. We have some audio that you sent us. This is him talking about his thoughts on, it's about police officers, law enforcement officers that travel from station to station.
I called at my daughter's celebration of life that there should be some changes in how things are prosecuted when they take place like this in the state. And I said that the state of Illinois could be leaders throughout our whole country for seeing that these frequent flyers who go from one department to another, who are given the opportunity to resign rather than be fired, because it's an easier process, and they go from one department to another, as this rogue cop did.
So he's talking about some of the policy prescriptions that people have been pursuing since this episode last year. What else have people been talking about changing in Illinois?
Yeah, so, you know, what James was referring to was the fact that Sean Grayson had a disciplinary record, right? So he had bounced around from several different departments around central Illinois. He, and, you know, with reporting, investigative reporting from Illinois Public Media, we were able to learn that he had problems just in nearly every police department, sheriff's department he was at prior to coming to Sangamon County, in addition to having two DUI arrests on his record. And so since that information came to light, you have this huge groundswell of community activists, members, Massey's family, and elected officials talking about ways to change how we hire police officers in Illinois. And so at the press conference yesterday, they had Representative Justin Slaughter, who's a Democrat from Chicago, and he's working with State Senator Doris Turner, who's actually from Springfield and actually knows the Massey family. She said that, you know, she knew Sonia, she knows her mother very well. And so for them, they're kind of teaming up now, right? To you know, the lawmakers are back in their spring session. It's going to adjourn end of May. So they have basically till the end of May to pass these reform bills that would essentially make it the hiring process, the background checking process for potential police hirees more stringent, more strict. And so that's one policy area they've talked about. I know that community members have also been pushing for more robust responses to mental health calls, because according to county records, you know, it's documented that Sonia was in need of mental health treatment and seeking mental health help up until the day she was killed, right? And so it's really called into question this, you know, system that we have set up in Sangamon County, but also kind of in a lot of places throughout Illinois, of, you know, when someone calls 911, they're under mental stress and duress. Do we deploy officers with their guns and their scary, you know, weapons, or do we deploy mental health professionals? And so that's something that, you know, lawmakers, elected officials are looking at as well.
You mentioned earlier, speaking of some of the policy implications here, that this is almost half. What, $10 million is like nearly half of the $22 million Sheriff's Department budget. Have county officials talked about how they're going to be paying for this, where the money's going to come from?
Yeah, so they had a county board meeting on Tuesday night where they officially approved the settlement. And they had county administrator come and explain that the money is actually coming from several reserve funds that they have for one-time emergency payments such as these. They're not going to, you know, raise taxes or cut funding from other departments. It's all just coming from a sort of, quote, rainy day fund. It is important to note, too, that, you know, according to the Massey family's lawyers, they're saying that this $10 million amount is perhaps one of the biggest, largest single payout that the county has ever made in a civil rights case like this.
Last thing I want to ask is about the former, now former, then current Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson, who has been charged with murder in Sonia Massey's killing. Where do things stand with his case?
Right. So there's a criminal trial going on for his, like you said, he's facing murder charges. He is currently in jail custody, and that is going under the petition process at the moment. So his lawyers have tried to get him released pretrial, basically arguing that he is no longer a danger to the community because the crime in which he's been charged for was committed while he was an officer. Now that he's been stripped of that title, he is no longer a danger and can't commit that crime, is their argument. And so the appeals court did allow for the pretrial release for Sean Grayson, but now the state's attorney's office, which is representing the people, that the state, you know, against Sean Grayson, they have appealed that decision up to the Illinois Supreme Court. And last I saw, the Supreme Court did agree to hear this case. We don't know when exactly, but we do know that the next court date for Sean Grayson is in March.
So no trial date set yet for when he's actually going to go before a jury or a judge. Okay. Mawa Iqbal, Statehouse reporter for Illinois Public Radio Stations, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This week, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois accused President Trump's pick to lead the FBI, Kash Patel, of directing firings at the Bureau, even though he isn't director yet. Durbin, the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, said in a letter he had highly credible information indicating as much, and he talked about it Tuesday on the Senate floor.
He's left behind a trail of grievances throughout his life, lashing out at anyone who dares to disagree with him or fails to respect him sufficiently. You want to give power to this man, the power of the investigation of the Federal Bureau of Investigation? I think not.
It's just one of many examples of the continuing legal turmoil around Trump, Elon Musk, and his allies as they aim to remake the United States government. Joining me now to talk about it is Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon. Again, news is moving fast, I should say, in order to make our schedules meet. Linda and I spoke Thursday evening. Linda, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Brian. Always good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of these allegations against Kash Patel. Durbin was obviously already opposed to Patel for director of the FBI. Now there's this accusation. How does this fit into the bigger picture of his nomination?
Well, Kash Patel does have quite the reputation. And so you can imagine, of course, that Dick Durbin would be vigorously opposed to him. I will say, however, that the Senate Judiciary Committee did vote him out of committee and sent his confirmation to the full Senate for a final confirmation vote sometime in the coming weeks. The vote was 12 to 10, Durbin opposing, of course. And some of the things that he said about Durbin, as you heard in that, that Durbin said about Patel, as you heard in that soundbite, was also talking about Patel's previous statements. For example, in a previous podcast with Steve Bannon, he said, I'm going to quote here, he said, "We're going to come after the people in the media who lied about American citizens who helped Joe Biden rig presidential elections." Once again, honing very closely to President Trump's talking points that he still continues to say that the election was stolen from him and that the Democrats and Joe Biden were responsible. So you can imagine that, of course, Patel would be a Trump loyalist who would be rewarded by giving this nomination and soon to be expected confirmation.
While we're on the subject of nominations, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was confirmed Thursday, pretty much along party lines. He's, of course, the noted anti-vaccine voice. He's one of many, many nominees who were controversial. And yet all Republicans, except former Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, voted in favor of his confirmation. And none of these nominees have faced enough opposition to really sink their confirmations. What does that say to you about the state of Republicans in Congress, Democrats as well, I guess, how they're showing opposition or not to President Trump?
Well, there is a prevailing opinion in Congress that presidents have the right to have the cabinet, to surround themselves with the people in that cabinet that they desire. Now, that also comes with certain caveats, and there has been a lot of opposition to put it frankly, some controversial nominees chosen by Donald Trump. But so far, the only one who has not made it through and pulled himself out of the running even before a confirmation hearing could begin was Matt Gaetz, who was the original nominee, the president-elect at that time's pick for attorney general. All of the other cabinet picks, despite widespread opposition for, so far, Kash Patel, Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence, Pete Hegseth for Defense Secretary, et cetera, have all gone through despite some very contentious confirmation hearings.
And I will never know, counterfactual, but I suspect that Matt Gaetz might have gone through had he stuck with it. Let's turn now, because we have to move fast today, limited time. Talk about this Elon Musk's effort to continue, I don't know, do we call it cuts in the federal government, destruction of systems and agencies in the federal government? He's talking about now selling real estate out from the federal government. That includes a building in Chicago, another one in Southern Illinois. He was in the Oval Office on Tuesday, standing next to President Trump behind the Resolute desk, sort of giving a news conference as Trump looked on. And now Trump has signed an executive order giving DOGE even more power over federal hiring. DOGE, of course, is this non-governmental private, I don't even know what you call it, group that Musk is heading. What effects are you seeing? How is this continuing to play out?
Well, I'm talking to you, as you mentioned, at the top of our conversation from Washington, D.C., which has the largest concentration of federal workers in the country. But federal workers are all over the country, and they are feeling the pinch. So far, there have been a number of court challenges to the Department of Government Efficiency's actions, which we should safely call it a task force, because it's not an actual department. Only Congress can create departments, and only Congress can abolish departments.
And Musk has not been confirmed by the Senate either, although he probably would be, as we discussed a moment ago, but yes.
Yes, so he's not a government employee. He has no experience in government at all, but he has tremendous power. And that is the crux of a lot of the lawsuits that have been filed against his actions, including a lawsuit about his cut of federal workers, offering this early buyout proposition. Some 75,000 federal workers have taken the buyout, fearing that if they don't, then they might get fired anyway. And so there's a lot of fear, a lot of stress, a lot of people who work for the federal government who are hurt, a lot of people who support those who work for the federal government who have businesses, for example, in the community, certainly here in the DMV, the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. So it's a big concern. Legal challenges so far have not gone very far. In fact, a judge has said that the challenge to the buyout program was okay, that challenge is all very well and good, but it would not stand, saying that those who brought up the challenge representing federal workers did not have legal standing in the case, although did not actually rule on the legality of those layoffs, just on standing. So there is conceivably the possibility that there will be more lawsuits. Dozens have been filed so far for various aspects of the DOGE's activities. And again, we expect more. But again, shuttering government agencies and departments is not a task that can be done according to the Constitution. It must be done by the Congress itself. And so we'll expect some more challenges along those lines.
Of course, we haven't really seen Elon Musk letting something like the law or congressional appropriations stand in his way so far. Linda Kenyon, Washington correspondent for Illinois Public Media. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show, which I'd like to remind you can now find on YouTube. Yes, you can find the 21st Show on YouTube. Just search for Illinois Public Media. All right. After the break, we'll check in, take a little break from politics and news, check in with a chocolate professor from here in Illinois. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.